Before we get started, a huge thank you to our friends at NAEP, the National Association for Primary Education. NAEP brings together teachers, parents and school governors who share a passion for giving every child the very best start in life, from birth to 13. Find out more and become part of this wonderful community, head over to naep.org.uk. That's naepe.org.uk. Hello and welcome back to the Education on Fire podcast. Great to be back with you. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Jacob Adams, and he's an educational leader committed to transforming schools into places of joy, belonging and critical thinking for black and brown youth. He coined the term disconnection crisis to describe how traditional education separates young people from their purpose, community and creativity. Now, back in 2017, he founded STEM to the Future, now called Inner Spark Learning Lab, which has reached over 40,000 young people and generated insights shaping the broader education field. The Inner Spark Learning Lab are teaching students to design the world they want to live in, ending the disconnection crisis by reconnecting youth with self, community, and possibility. Now, just before we start, I just want to mention for those people watching on YouTube via video, apologies for the fact that I just updated my studio when I recorded this and there was a technical thing, the frame rate wasn't quite right. So the camera on my side looks a little bit off. I hope that doesn't disrupt too much, but I think it's such a great conversation. I wanted to make sure that you were still able to watch this. Will make no difference to those of you just listening on the traditional audio platforms. Thanks so much and really hope you enjoy this. My conversation with Jacob Adams and the Inner Spark Learning Lab. Hello, my name is Mark Taylor and welcome to the Education on Fire podcast. The place for creative and inspiring learning from around the world. Listen to teachers, parents and mentors share how they are supporting children to live their best, authentic life and are proving to be a guiding light to us all. Hi, Jacob. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Education on Fire podcast. Always great to chat to someone from the other side of the pond. But I think more importantly, what I love the most is the fact that the essence of what children need and how they learn and how they come to life with their education, I think, is almost universal no matter where they're from. So I think this is going to be a fantastic conversation. So, yeah, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, Mark. Excited to chat.
So I'm obviously here in the UK. Give us a little idea of where you are in the world and how that sort of fits into what you're creating.
Yeah, for sure. So right now I'm in Los Angeles, California. Actually, I'm at a conference right now, but I'm also still in LA. The conference is here. So I'm in town. But yeah, I'm in LA. But before I was here, I actually started. I'm from Augusta, Georgia, so in the southern part of the United States. Was a fourth grade. In fourth grade, I was at this like magnet school, which is like an accelerated school, basically. And there, I got this award for Honors Day, you know, like A honor roll, AB honor roll. And I remember the principal being like, "We have AB honor roll with the exception of conduct." And then she was called my name. And I was like, what in the world? So I went up there, got the award, was the only kid to get the award, like they shook her hand and then they moved on to the next thing. And I think at the time it was weird. It mainly was weird because no one else got it and I had never heard of it before. And then I was almost expecting it every other year, but they never even did it again. So I guess my teacher was just looking out. But I say that to say, like, since I was 8, 9 years old, I've kind of had a kind of I've kind of been critical of the education system, despite going to a quote unquote good school, and I would do my work and then I would find ways to like disrupt and rebel. But then from there, fast forward a bit, I ended up going to New York, where I taught first grade at this like high, quote unquote, high performing charter school. In the United States, there's like this award that schools could get where if they're under a certain poverty level, but the test scores are a certain thing, they like a blue ribbon school. So it was one of those, but the school was ran like a prison. Like kids teaching first grade, kids didn't have recess. So I think I took my kids outside like 3 times in 2 years and I had to get permission every single time. Kids had to sit with their hands together like this. Like if their hands are apart, you're not even supposed to teach. Can't talk at breakfast. Again, no recess, which feels just like inhumane. But because the test scores were so high, like the school got all the awards, all the attention. And some days there'd be like 50 people there just seeing what we were doing so they could take it back to their school. So that I left there, went to another school in Harlem, doing professional development. They put on the tapes. It teaches how to teach the exact same place I just came from. Same people, same class, same school. So I saw how that model was spreading. So I ended up leaving, moved to LA to train teachers. And now I'm seeing a bunch of schools on any given day. And I was like, oh, just overall school is boring. Like even the good teachers, like school is irrelevant. Kids aren't really learning anything that's aligned with who they are or what they're passionate about or connected to the community. And all like the kids, most of the kids who are doing well, it's because they knew how to adapt to school and they knew how to adapt to the environment, but very rarely was the environment actually adapting to the kids and to the families. And so I wanted to make something that could flip that and actually make the school a place that adapts to the kids and families and stop trying to make the kids and families adapt to the school.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And there are two things I want to try and remember to make sure that we cover based on what you've done there. One is obviously what you're doing in terms of InnerSpark learning and within the lab and all of that kind of thing. But probably more importantly, after that, I want to know how that fits in the education ecosystem, because it's almost anti what you've just described, isn't it? And when there are people on one side saying, yes, but look at the results, look at what we're doing, look at the awards, it's really hard to sort of say, yeah, but look at the kids, you know, look at what they could do if they're learning in this way compared to that way. But they're like, yeah, but look at the awards, look at what we're able to do, everyone's really happy with what we're doing. So I'm really keen on sort of your experience with that. But first of all, take us into sort of the InnerSpark learning and tell us sort of what that is and why you started that, obviously based on the experience you've just spoken about.
For sure. Yeah, and then also so I don't forget to that second point, at the conference I was at, there was a woman from the school district that was speaking about how well the school district is doing last night. And so whenever we had that conversation, I'd like to fit that in because it feels super relevant. But yeah, InnerSpark, I to say our mission is to like turn schools into places that kids and families want to be. So, you know, I believe when in the United States, at least, chronic absenteeism is a big problem. So just kids not coming to school consistently, reading, like when it comes to test scores, like reading and math, like kids are like the test scores, like pre-COVID levels. And, you know, we have kids suffering with like mental health issues that like rates we've never seen before. And all those are big problems, like, don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of people working on kind of interventions within them. But my kind of belief and like a hypothesis about why none of those interventions are working is because no one is really trying to change the environment in which those things are meant to take place. There's this author, Peter Gray. He like references this study that says, out of all the places that kids spend a substantial amount of time, like they're the most dissatisfied with school. So it's like, well, if kids don't want to be at school, of course they're not gonna, like, at scale, they're not gonna read, right, and do math. And like, why should we expect them to do anything else? You know, we're having them come to this place that they don't like, they don't enjoy, it doesn't feel relevant from 4 till 18, and we expect them to just, I mean, yeah, anyway, yeah, and they say that that's supposed to create, like, you know, intelligent, civically engaged individuals, but I feel like, to me, it doesn't really make sense, so... At InnerSpark, what we're doing is learning, like, what does it take to turn a school into a place that kids feel like they belong, that kids feel connected, and it feels relevant to kids. And the way that we have, like, learned the process of how to make that happen is through this basically feedback loop that we've created that's called, like, a Listen, Learn, Adapt. And so when I founded the organization, it was 2017. And then we were called like STEM to the Future. And so we were like teaching STEM, teaching STEAM, so science, technology, engineering, art, and math, but doing it in ways where kids were using it to address like unmet needs in the school, unmet needs in the community. Cause I was like, what's the point of teaching these skills with the priority of being like workforce development if that means kids have to leave the community, or that means the jobs that kids could get are ones that just kind of perpetuate the same harms that the community has to deal with on the daily. So like, how could you actually learn how to use this stuff in ways that's beneficial to them? And then in 2020, we started this Youth Participatory Action Research Program. We're like teaching kids, so this is online, it's like during COVID, but we're teaching kids how to do research about them, like learn about themselves, learn about the neighborhood, learn about the community, and then use what they were learning to decide like what issues or problems they want to, or like opportunities they want to address. And so that went really well. It was an all-girls program at the time. They ended up building these robots that will, like, prototypes attached to a robot that could deliver masks and gloves to elders at this apartment complex for one of the guest speakers. And then the next year, we did it in person. And it just, like, wrapped the story up. What we learned was, like, in that program, like, at a certain point, we're pretty much making the curriculum, like, on a week-to-week basis. And it's all in response to, like, what the kids are learning in their research, or what types of questions they're seeing, what's happening in their world, what's happening in their mind, like, what things do they want to do. And our ability to adjust and adapt to that program, like, when you look at the data from there and the data to the programs that we ran in the schools, like, when it comes to belonging, connection, like, engagement, like, attendance, not night and day per se, but way higher in the YPAR program. So we realized, like, the curriculum, the things we teach, like, it's important, but the main driver of getting kids to enjoy learning and enjoy the program was the fact that we were making it the thing that they wanted them to be. So we saw the impact that could have an after school program. And so now we're seeing, now we're learning, like, what happens when you do that within a school. Because I believe if we could make a program a place kids actually want to be, now let's see, you know, can that same framework work to help schools become a place kids and families want to be?
So one of the things that struck me on my recent Gay Grouse season was the fact that he asked children, you know, why'd you come to school? And he said there's something like 80% of kids say, because I have to. Like you say, that's an awful long time from an early age all the way through to, let's say, 18 or whenever you're going to leave school, to just be there because you have to. And I think hopefully within that, even in whatever system you're in, you find something that gets you motivated and interested. For me, it was music, and it led to the joy of music in school and led into my career afterwards. I was very lucky about that. But like I say, sometimes that's not the case, and people are just there for the sake of it, as it were. One of the things I'm interested from what you just said is, even if you sort of grab the attention of children, you make it interesting, you make it purposeful, because that's what they're doing, they get a sense of community, they really get engaged with it. How do you then sort of straddle that thing between the things that they have to learn and the things that they need in order to help the project that they're on? And I don't mean have to learn because they've got to do an exam, because that's a whole different conversation as well that we may touch on as well. But in terms of, you know, if you're creating something which is related to a robot, or you need to do something which produces something, there's a certain amount of literacy or numeracy or whatever the background of that is to do it. How does that sort of work within the program, or the understanding of children saying, oh yes, I need to learn this in order to be able to do that, if that kind of makes sense?
Yeah, for sure. So the way our program works is, like, embedded within the school, within the school day. And so some of it is like, oh, what'd be a good example? I think there's, like, kind of like two different, or probably several, but two different ways I'm thinking of it. I think if we had someone come do a site visit a few months ago, and the kids were doing this, like, different engineering, they're doing less, like, engineering lesson. And then afterwards, she was like, oh, yeah, the kids are doing physics. She's like, your kids are doing physics, and they're doing, I think it was just physics at that point. She's like, yeah, they're doing physics, but, like, y'all don't call it that. And it makes me wonder, do we even need to call it that? She was like, the kids don't realize they're doing it, but, like, that's what's happening. And, like, so they might not have the technical term that we use, but, like, they're still doing the thing. So there's some of it where it's like, I think our kids are doing these things that they have to learn, or they, like, need to know. We just haven't labeled them, which I know that kind of could be a discussion, like, when should you, when shouldn't you? And then the other things I think is, like, then how can you leverage, especially here, man, like, within a class, like, the range of what kids know, you know, on one end of the spectrum, one kid could be a few grade levels ahead in reading and math, and another one could be 3-4 grade levels behind, and, like, everything in between. So it's like, how can, especially with the amount of time we have with them, it's like, how can we leverage the other kids in the class to help bridge the gaps? So, you know, if it's like they need help with the math part of it, how can we, like, at that point we know who the kids are, how can we set it up where they could teach each other? If it's a literacy thing, you know, while we're not going to be doing, like, explicit, like, phonics training, or, you know, explicit, like, phonics lessons with them, you know, how are we setting them up to be able to make sure they, like, comprehend it? Are we reading it and then they're following along? Do we have other kids reading it? You know, how are we checking in with the students who may be below, like you can't read the content to make sure they understand. So yeah, I feel like we have to be a little creative with it, but as much as we can, trying to find the kids in the room that can do the skill or know the thing, and then have them take the lead for the other kids in the class.
Yeah, I love that. And I think sometimes we just have to remember that we're the adults in the room. It's that kind of, we can set the environment. We know the bigger picture. You know, you still have exams to pass or tests to do, or as a society, you have to function in that way. But we don't have to make it look as it's supposed to, as it were, because we can set the scene. Like you said, you know, you might be able to do this whole thing as a project and never mention a particular term which might scare them off. But if they're learning it and they're embracing it, at some point you can drop that in and it's like, oh, okay, so I've literally just learned all of the physics I need, or I literally just learned all of the literacy I needed to be able to create this document that enabled me to put a project together or sell something or whatever it happens to be. And I think it's much easier to do it at that point because then it becomes relevant, whereas it doesn't so much before. And I think, as you said, it's the relevancy and the here and now and it making a difference to my world but your world, and then you'll learn whatever you want to learn, I think, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And because they leave their teacher's class, comes to the lab, they'll do their, you know, we'll do our thing, and then they'll go back. So then some of it is too, is like for us, because we're, again, embedded within the school, so we have good relationships with the staff, good relationships with the teachers, like we know what they're doing. So then we could just reference the things that are going on in their class, like, hey, you know, as you're doing this like challenge, what did you notice? Like, oh, is that similar to what you were talking about, like in Ms. Montgomery's class? Like, how was it? How wasn't it? And then getting them to start to connect them dots so that when they are in class and they do the things that could feel irrelevant, they can then think back to what we were doing with them and be like, okay, well, in here, like the way I'm learning it in this class, like it feels abstract or I don't get why we're doing it, but because of what we did in lab, I see that it has a purpose. Like I see how it could be helpful to me. Yeah.
And I know agency is an important factor in terms of being able to show or demonstrate or the things that have actually been produced. I think that's such an important thing, because when the end goal is just to be able to have a test to go to the next grade or to go to university or to get a job, it's so way off. I think to actually feel like I've produced this, I've made a difference, come see it, let me explain it, let me show you it, let me demonstrate it, depending on what the project is, and to realise that everything you're doing at every point of your life is making a difference, then, like, say, the test scores, the things you have to do, they are still important, I guess, and children will still feel the pressure maybe of having to do that, but they've got these however many things they've done up to that point to know that actually what I'm doing today is relevant. I'm not just waiting for something to happen or tick a box further down the line.
Yeah, exactly. And then the where now I feel like the only measure of success is, do I do well on this test? And where that just becomes a thing that you have to do, not only like the thing you have to do. So yeah, like along the way you could build your confidence, and the test, like I'm sure just like the pressure of it would still be there, but I feel like the it could be less pressure perhaps, and also just like your relationship to equating your own value as an individual as how well I do on this test. I feel like we could really disrupt that by giving kids multiple opportunities. Really, we could just get rid of the test, but you know, in the meantime, if we could just give them all these different ways to see that like their identity shouldn't be tied to or how they do on some arbitrary test. But again, they could find out how these different, you know, who they are, what they care about, and then how could they use that to actually help the school, help the community become the place that they want it to be.
Yeah, I love that. So take me into who it is that you're working with now, what your plans are. With the, you know, you mentioned you're in LA. How do you pick the schools? How do you pick the students? Is it specific sort of to that locality, and you're still doing some sort of online related stuff, like you say, having sort of started that in COVID?
Yeah, for sure. So now at any given time, we used to be in, at one time, it could be like four or five schools at a time. And over the course of the year, like up to 30 or 40. But most of those, it would be like one-off workshops, or we work like half the kids half the year and another half the kids the other half the year. So it's like really hard to develop like the relationships that we need, I think, to actually start to create the change within the school or within the program that we want or that we feel like is necessary for the learning to actually stick. And so now we're just like embedding everything into one school and phasing out all of the one-off stuff, or like the half the part-time stuff. And so what that looks like is we start with this role called a Dreamweaver. Her name is Kendra. So she's like really gets to know the kids, really gets to know the families. And then she's using that to be able to inform basically everything we do, within our other two programs, and also using that to like, create like different family events, being able to connect the families to different things that they have or they need, or finding folks within, you know, families within the school that have things they want to offer and bring to the school. Like, how can we, be that bridge? And then, we have a weekly class that all the kids in this school come to. So the TK, or like pre-K, depending where you're at, through second grade, they come, and they're doing our curriculum, which is like really about like a lot of problem solving, a lot of curiosity, but really around like self-awareness. Like, how can we have kids start to, at a young age, learn who they are, what they care about? How do you communicate that? How do you receive it from other people? And then how can you like build your, you know, your curiosity, like your persistence, your critical thinking, like start to create an environment where they feel safe doing that. And then third through fifth grade, is now the Youth Participatory Action Research Program. So it used to be just an after-school program we did for like 30 kids. But now we're taking that and we're doing it for the entire third through fifth grade. And so like the way that could look in practice is through the different interviews and like surveys and observations that the Dreamweaver has done, Kendra will hear that kids wish recess was longer, like they all the time. That's what they say. It's like, okay, cool. We can't make recess longer, but we can see what happens when we give y'all more, when there's like more play, more freedom, more movement within school, and like, let's see what happens. And so we could take like the second graders for like 2 months and we could study. We're going to like find some different family members who have different like expertise. There's some parents that might teach dance, some that might have like a some wellness or some athletics. Have them come in, set up different things for the kids to do. The kids can self-select. And then we'll just incorporate more like freedom, play, movement into our curriculum. And we'll like study it for 2 months. Like with that group of kids, what happened with their belonging? Like, do they feel more connected to the school? Did attendance change? Did like did we see a difference in like behavioral issues? So we'll study that. And then while that's happening, we'll, the third through fifth grade students, they will start to then create different ways for the, use what they're learning to be able to develop things that incorporate more play and more movement into the school. So that way, now we have the research from the second grade students. So we get to see what happens when we incorporate more play and more movement. And then with the third through fifth graders, like they're creating their own things that bring more freedom, more play and more movement into the school. And then again, we have the researchers we're working with who will show like what's happening as the, what's happening within the school as these like basically this feedback loop is happening. So yeah, we do that. So that'd be like a cycle of learning, and then we'll share what we're learning like through each step with the principal, with the admin, and then outside of the school. So we can have people start to see like the changes that take place as the school starts to adapt and evolve to the kids and the families.
I think I love that everybody being involved thing, because like I say, when you've got proper communication with the parents and the families, and you've got a school that's on board because they've brought you in to be able to do it, and then you're researching it so you can actually sort of evidence base and sort of say, yeah, look, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're hearing, and we've got all this to back it up, then all of a sudden you're having serious conversations about we're showing you how great this is, we're showing you how to do it, it's based on the information that we have, and we're giving you that facility that I guess if the schools knew about it in the way, they could do it on their own, but actually because you're sort of set up to do that. And so what does that look like going forward? Is it kind of the school wanted something to happen or something to change, so they brought you in and then you sort of, they become self-sufficient based on all the work you've done, and then you move on to a different school? Or can the system then be adaptive from a school that maybe is further away and you can't go into, but you're still getting that philosophy and that understanding to sort of make that difference to those children further afield?
Yeah, for sure. So that the lab is going on, and then also we work with we have a partnership with this university out here, Loyola Marymount. So we work with them to train three different schools, from like the admin all the way to all the educators, on how train them over the next 2 years as they implement the same like listen, learn, adapt cycle. So that allows us to learn like how do you train a school to implement the system, and like how do you coach the teachers? What relationships need to be true with the admin? Like what mindsets need to be there? What does that process look like? So we learn that, and then within the lab, we learn how to actually do it ourselves. So then our goal is in the next like 3 years, we would then be able to take what we've learned. In the third year, we would have a second lab. So we'd have the elementary school, and then we had the middle school. So then we could see how to, even internally, how do you share what you're learning across schools? But from 3 years from now, we could take what we've learned from our partnership with LMU. We could take what we've learned as we've been implementing the lab ourselves, and then use that to be able to have the research, to have the proof, to be like, okay, now we want to create a network of schools, a network of organizations who are implementing this listen, learn, adapt cycle on their own, and trying to make their schools or their organizations places that adapt to the kids and families. And then basically just be like the kind of convener that supports the different schools or organizations for now, at least across the country, help them set their hypotheses, help them be able to analyze the data, come up with their learning cycles, have them go do it, and then bring them back so they could share within the group. And then we could share what we're learning, you know, externally too. And we would want to keep our two labs because I feel like those just like can remain the like demonstration sites, and it allows us to never, and I always feel some type of way when I feel like we have these like institutes or these places that are teaching folks how to do things and they don't even do it themselves. And so, especially because as times change, like kids change, the environment changes, technology changes. Like if you're not doing it, I'm going to question a little bit if you're the one, you know, you're supposed to be the one that can show everybody else how to do it. And so I really believe that, like, I want us to be able to do both. So then, you know, that also doesn't mean that we can just be, we have to be the ones who figured it out. We're working on it the same way all the other schools and organizations are in the network are working on it. And so our own approach gets refined as we're doing it, but it also gets refined through the other schools and organizations that would be in the network. So the goal is to like build the model, codify the model now, make sure we understand it, and then start to, at scale, start to train other folks over the country so that we can kind of create this network and like school by school, organization by organization, start to change what people believe, you know, schools and youth development places can be.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really exciting prospect. And I think the thing that gets me really excited about this is the fact that it's very easy to sit back and go, look, the silver bullet will be this. The government's going to change their whole philosophy about it. We're going to rewrite what education looks like. I think we can safely say here and now that's not going to be happening in the next couple of months. In the meantime, right, all these kids are going through school and having to learn their journey then there. So I think to be able to have these conversations and show a real impact and a real kind of insight into, we can make this happen in the here and now, within the current climate, within the current situation, within the current systems. And I think also that people really understand it's what people really want. They can see that children really want it. They can see the benefits of everyone coming together and doing it, and to be able to then show it in real time and demonstrate that with all of the things that you've mentioned so far, that's such an exciting possibility. And like you say, within time and the infrastructure, as you were saying, you can really see that happening. And hopefully both of those sort of ships happen at the same time. There's a little bit of support from outside, but also making that difference from the inside out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And in the, yeah, yeah, and I feel like the way we're setting, like the way the organization works, you know, through every phase of what we're doing, the goal is to be able to share. So like so this year was the first year we like started to bring everything into one school. And then next year will be the first year from like day one, all the programs are in the same school running at the same time. So I'm really excited about that. But like this year we had two different kind of like learning agendas, I guess. So one was like, how do you build effective communication system with families at the schools, especially being that like we're not the school, we're just you know, a part of the school. And then the second was around these like self-reflective check-ins. So like, how do you how can we create how can we help kids become like more self-aware and more reflective of who they are and what they want and, you know, what they care about. And so we basically, which one do I want to talk about first? So in the family communication cycle, what we ended up, so all of our facilitators like went and did like interviewed families. They talked to them after school. They, well, actually, depending on the school, like for some of our facilitators, like they sent surveys and then that wasn't working. So then they start to go to like the family nights that the school already has. And so then they found out for them that was the best way to build relationships and hear what types of ways the families wanted to be communicated. For another facilitator, like the surveys worked. They got a lot of responses. And for another one, since she's there all the time, she would just, during drop-off, she would just post up and talk to the families as kids were getting picked up. And so they each end up developing three different ways that worked for their three different schools on how to like best listen to the families. Then they use that to create their communications, what they heard from families. They use that to create three different like communication systems across three schools. Like one uses this virtual platform called Padlet. The one who was running at the after school program at the time, since a smaller group, they just end up having these different, just more like traditional newsletter that they would write. And then the third one, she ended up, she's actually doing something with teachers. And so for them, she was learning how to make the environment a place that they wanted to be. So we'll set hers to the side because it's not as relevant to this. And then they, for those two facilitators, they basically then implemented that family communication system for like 8 weeks to see what they learned, what they were learning. So then alongside that, we have these like self-reflective check-in learning cycles where, again, we're trying to learn like this process of getting kids to like open up, be more self-aware. And so through that, we were coming up with these different prompts. So each facilitator was coming up with prompts they could share with kids to get them to open up. And so like two of the prompts that really stood out when we asked the kids were like, what makes you feel like you, and like what's something that makes you do and you feel like you're losing track of time. And so and there's a bunch of, there's a series of prompts we use throughout the course of like the learning cycle, but those were like two at least that stood out. But one of the things, and I'll come back to stuff we learned there, but one of the things we learned through those learning cycles was a common theme across schools where kids wanted to spend more time with their families. Like they understood like their families are working, they don't have a lot of time, but like they all said they wish they had more time with their families. And so then within the family communication system, we're like, okay, cool. One facilitator then has the kids start to write the newsletter to their individual parent to start to build that bridge. And then we start to create these kits that we could send home with the kids so they could start to do them with their families, and then giving their families prompts that they could use to talk to their kids about the stuff they were doing and just start to learn more about them. So again, just even those two learning cycles, like we have them going on at the same time. And then as the learning was happening, we see how there's like points of connection. And so it's like, okay, as we're doing these self-reflective check-ins, we're learning more about the kids and what they want. And actually that aligns with what we're communicating with the families. Like, how can we bring those two things together? So I'll say all that to say, like, as we keep growing and over the course of a year, we do more of those. And then as we have a network of schools that are doing more of those, it's like, not only do you, like the system that come out of the, that comes out of those, like it worked for that school we were in or the schools that we're in, but that doesn't mean it's going to work anywhere. But if anything, we learn, like, not only do we get the systems, but we learn like ways in which to even, like what are different ways to listen to parents? Like what are different questions that you can ask them to get them to let you know how they want to be communicated with the students? It's like, not only do we have the prompts, but we learn that like the older they were, the more expressive they were. And across ages, like no matter if, well, across ages, if you had them in small groups and they didn't have to write, but you actually set them up to discuss, they were way more expressive. And if you give them ways to express their thinking outside of writing, whether it's like drawing or just like verbally, or it's like through a song or so through some other creative outlet, like for a lot of kids, like they're able to express themselves more that way. And we learn just as the year goes on, they get more and more expressive. So long way of saying, you know, we're learning a lot over the course of the year, but as we keep doing it and they have more schools and more organizations who are running it, the learnings really start to compound. And then to the point you were making, like, we have a lot of evidence to show people, like, there's so many different things we could do right now today, like, despite the climate, that can help schools become a place that kids don't feel like they go to because they have to, but they go because, you know, somewhere they want to be, because they get to ask their questions, because they know people there care about them.
I love it. And I think the thing that strikes me the most is the fact that we know from here on in, it's not going to be so much about knowledge that it's going to be important. It's about how people communicate. It's about the critical thinking. It's about how people come together and share what they know, but who they are and how they relate and how that moves forward. So I sort of love that this is a perfect way of demonstrating that this isn't a system. You don't have to do it like this. It doesn't have to look like this. You can't just suddenly learn it. But it's a whole way of being that then is important, because that's the essence of what you're going to do next year, the year after, 5 years, having left school, into your work life, into whatever that happens to look like, which is what the teachers and the schools are having to do now in order to make that work. And it's a little bit kind of, I'm not quite sure how this fits with me, because I'm used to it being quite, you know, 2x4, as it were. It's, it has to look like this. It has to work in a certain way. But once you embrace that and you realize everyone's thriving in that way, then you kind of, I think you relax into it, you take a breath into it, and you realize actually now we're really set up, because these foundations are really solid, because we can adapt and move and understand, and wherever the world takes us, and we know that's changing fast, we've got what we need in order to be able to be flexible and adapt as we need to. And that really, I guess, is the essence of what we're trying to give kids, especially in this day and age.
Yeah, exactly. I think our job isn't to tell kids how to navigate the map of life, let alone tell them where they need to go and then show them how to get there. I feel like the quote unquote like best schools, that's what they do. I feel like our job should be just to show kids that even as adults, we're learning how to create the map ourselves. So like we're trying to figure out who we are and where we want to go, and then what are the skills we need to get there. And so I feel like, yeah, we're teaching kids like what's the process of creating their own, like how do you know who you are so that you can decide where you want to go, and then what's the process of navigating there? And you know, halfway along the journey you might realize you probably will actually I don't want to go there, I'd rather go over here instead, and that's cool. And over there, like, there's gonna be a hurdle. How do you get over it? What do you decide you don't want to get over it, or do you decide you want to have to figure it out and go over, go under, go around, whatever? So yeah, you know, it's not so like linear. It's actually just trying to teach kids and even ourselves as adults, like what are the skills you need to decide where you want to go, and then feel confident that on your way, you're going to be able to navigate it.
Yeah. And I think just to sort of complete that circle, what you've done in the way that you've explained it and how it works is the fact you've demonstrated that with everything that you've done with the children. So it's not that it's like, oh, I now need, I've got something else I need to be aware of. You've done it. However you want to label it, however you want to describe it in terms of what your future will look like, you've experienced it in the here and now as part of what we've been doing. It's just the same thing. And like I say, it's very easy to think we have to discuss these things in a certain way. We have to be able to express ourselves in a certain way because it's the formal way of learning, or the formal way of, you know, talking to the university, the employer, or the whatever. But actually just that sense of, I've been there, done it, I can show you what I did, I can explain what I did and why it worked for me, and then it becomes human to human. And I think that's what's going to separate everybody out, to people want to gravitate to what you're about. And I think that's such a positive thing to be able to do.
Sure, yeah.
Now, I'm often asked about podcasting, video, tips on being a great guest, and all other related information. So I wanted to make sure that you knew I help and support people in these fields with my friends Lisa and Neil as part of the Creative Amplifiers. We have written posts, videos, podcasts, and do regular live streams, so we can provide the best current information for you. You can find us by searching Creative Amplifiers on YouTube, and I suggest looking at our Substack, which is creativeamplifiers.substack.com. The link will be in the description. Remember, you don't have to be on Substack to view this content, so why not just go and take a look? That's creativeamplifiers.substack.com. Now, obviously, the acronym FIRE is really important to us here at Education on Fire, and by that we mean feedback, inspiration, resilience, and empowerment. And you mentioned feedback earlier on is a really important thing. What is it that strikes you, and how do you want to dive into that?
Yeah, I think feedback is just so important because it creates a constant cycle. It should create like a constant cycle of like adaptation. And so I feel like, you know, the feedback in and of itself is important, but more importantly, it's like whose feedback holds the most value. And I feel like within education, at least, in a formal education, like the feedback that has the highest currency is of people who don't go to school every day. It's the policy people, it's the school board members, it's the textbook folks, it's all these people who have some vested interest in the education system other than the actual holistic development of the kids that go there. And so, what I believe is like we need to change the feedback loop so that it's informed by the people who are in the school every single day, like starting with the kids. So, as a teacher, how can you make, what can you do within your current context to make sure that you're adapting your practice, you're adapting your curriculum, you're adapting your systems to be a place that actually works for your kids and for your families. As an administrator, what are you doing to create the environment where you have the feedback loops in place so you can learn from your staff to make sure that you're giving them what they need to be able to adapt in real time? So then now it's not this one teacher down the hall who's adapting. The whole school can start to create this environment where the feedback they value the most is that of the kids and the families, in terms of how they do they feel like they belong here. Why are they, not only are they coming to school, but why are they coming to school? Like underlying it, like that's the most important part. The most important part to that question is not are they coming, but why are they or why aren't they? So yeah, and I feel like once you start to create a feedback loop that operates from the inside out, like that elites that creates an environment where everyone in there feels more inspired because people are working on things that feel relevant to them. They see the purpose. They care about they care about what's happening in the building because it affects them their every day. And in terms of the resilience, like someone asked me the other day, like what advice would I have around like being persistent? And like if you know who you are, it's easier to be persistent and like kind of deal with the punches or be able to deal with adversity because you're trying to get to a place you want to go. It's a lot harder to deal with adversity when you're just doing it because it's someone else's idea of what success is. But when it's what you want to do, it's way easier to navigate through the difficult times. So I think you create a more resilient school, a more resilient community, because again, as a collective, we're doing the things that we need. And the empowerment, like again, like now you're showing that the solutions, the solutions, the creation of the place that the school could be, that the community could be, like that's coming from the kids, coming from the families, coming from the teachers in the school. And so now folks know that they don't need to wait from people from the outside to tell them who they are, what they should be. Like they can create that themselves. And it might not work. I mean, it might not be what they want it to be because of all the different things that exist, but even the developing the understanding of what issues and what barriers get in the way creates a sense of empowerment because now you know, like, okay, some of us are going to work on changing that thing, and the rest of us who have a different path, like going to change that policy, that's where we're putting our energy, and the others of us are going to work on these other things. But again, that like so feedback creates a whole loop that leads itself where they basically just do the thing from the inspiration, the resilience, and empowerment, like I was just saying.
I think that's so brilliantly put, and I think it's so easy, especially with an education, to be talking about, we wish it was like this, we wish it was like that, it could be like this, I'm doing it for this reason or that reason, or I got into education for this reason and that reason. And the thing that I love the most about what you just described, I think so brilliantly within the acronym there, is the fact that you've demonstrated and explained today how it works, why it works, and the fact that people are doing it. And I think that's the thing. It's not just about the conversation, it's the action that goes with it, and actually being able to say, look, here's a way of doing it, here's a conversation to have, here's the next step. And you can see why that is all based, like you say, on conversations and research. So Jacob, thank you so much. It's been brilliant to chat to you about it. People who are inspired to want to know more, get involved in whatever way that looks like, where would you like them to go? What would you like them to take a look at?
For sure. At innersparklab.org/podcast, through that will like get you, that's a good way to connect, like whether it be the different things we're learning, the different like conferences or workshops that we host. We share those there. And then also too, like that's where I'm kind of sharing like what I'm seeing and what I'm learning on this journey of like trying to create an organization that is help schools become place kids and families want to be, because again, like that's not easy, from trying to get the funding from it to the different policy things that we have to deal with, and then also sometimes great stories come out of it. So it's a good way for folks to just see the journey and also be able to share with us like what are they learning, because I know other people are doing it too, so we want to be able to learn as well and be able to highlight and build those connections. And then also if you're on LinkedIn, I share a lot on there as well. It's like Jacob Adams, you'll see me, the bald-headed dude, got a beard with glasses.
Yeah, and we'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes as well. So yeah, Jacob, thank you. Keep inspiring. Keep up the great work. Yeah, can't wait to follow and see how it progresses in the future.
For sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Education is not the filling of a pail,
but the lighting of a fire.
To help and support you further, I have created a free PDF of 10 resources you can use to help support learning. These wide-ranging resources are made and provided by guests on the show and include a children's podcast, mentoring, online teaching and learning tools, science, maths, spelling, reading and writing, the arts, resilience and empathy, and global citizenship, together with parental engagement and whole school mental health. Get your free PDF now at educationonfire.com. Thanks for listening to the Education on Fire podcast. For more information of each episode and to get in touch, go to educationonfire.com. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.